I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Chris Gardner. He made millions in the stock market and now spends equal time making money and giving it away. But that wasn't always his story. Gardner lived on the streets for a while with his young son, a story made famous by the film The Pursuit of Happiness. We've asked him to share some wisdom on the current economic crisis and how to survive through tough times. But first, Sarah Palin. She heads to St. Louis this week to take part in her one and only debate with Democratic vice presidential pick Joe Biden. That's tomorrow. But in the short few weeks since she joined the Republican ticket, it's clear that she has become much more than just another candidate. She's become some sort of cultural flashpoint. Adoring crowds flock to her campaign appearances, while comedians like Tina Fey gleefully skewer her erratic media performances. Here's Fey on Saturday Night Live.
Ultimately, what the bailout does is help those that are concerned about the health care reform that is needed to help shore up our economy, to help... It's got to be all about job creation, too. Also, too, shoring up our economy and putting Fannie and Freddie back on the right track. And so health care reform and reducing taxes and reining in spending, because Barack Obama, you know.
So as Palin prepares for tomorrow night's vice presidential debate, we wanted to talk about Palin mania. How much of the criticism of her is fair? Where is the line between legitimate concern about her credentials and performance and sexist bias? I'm joined by a roundtable of columnists who've been writing and thinking about these questions. Marie Coco of the Washington Post Writers Group. Janice Krauss, she's a senior fellow at the Beverly LaHaye Institute, which is the think tank for concerned women for America. She's also a weekly contributor to townhall.com. Salon.com writer Rebecca Traister, and Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's a contributing editor at The Atlantic. I thank you all so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Marie, I want to start with you because you were writing about sexism in the primaries before a lot of other people started talking about it. So I wanted to ask you, obviously, the subject then was this whole question of the way Senator Hillary Clinton was treated. So I'd like to ask, how do you see the coverage of Sarah Palin, particularly when you think about what you saw with Senator Clinton?
Well, I think two things, really. One is that undoubtedly there has been some outrageously sexist treatment of her, which I have found awesomely predominant in the liberal press. Just a few weeks ago, I wrote a column that highlighted a piece in Salon Magazine, the online magazine, that was illustrated with a graphic of Sarah Palin depicted in a black lace corset with long black gloves, holding a whip and taming a moose. And the title of the piece was The Dominatrix. Now, I have to be honest, I don't believe that a male candidate would be caricatured in quite that way. At the same time, the McCain campaign is, in my view, guilty of two things. One is they've cried wolf on sexism, and they have really tried to make any legitimate criticism of her preparation or her credibility or her substantive knowledge of the issues. They have tried to turn all of that legitimate journalistic inquiry into sexism, which I think is not a valid claim. And by the way, just the other day, Senator McCain, in one of the Katie Couric interviews, was pictured sitting down right there next to Sarah Palin as if he was chaperoning her. And that is, in my view, the picture of him sitting in the chair next to her as if she needed her father with her is one of the most sexist images that's gone out there so far since she's been on the ticket.
So you think she's taken some sexist hits, but you also think some of these are self-inflicted wounds.
And I think, frankly, the McCain campaign has been guilty of promoting it in a way, the way that she has been sequestered, kept away from the media, so that when she finally did sit down with Katie Couric, it's become almost a novelty act and a sideshow instead of, and it's partly because there is novelty to it. She hasn't been out there.
Okay. Jess Krauss, what do you think?
Well, Michelle has not been around lately either, so that cuts both ways. It's
Michelle,
been appalling.
You mean Michelle Obama?
Michelle Obama.
But yeah. she's not a candidate.
No, she's not a candidate, but she was very much involved in the campaign up until she became a bit of an embarrassment with some of her comments, and now you can barely see her, and you don't hear her at all. So I do think it cuts both ways. Regarding the sexism, you know, it was appalling to me. I don't know if you saw this bar out west has now got a nude picture of Sarah Palin in the bar. And, you know, I just was appalled to think, you know, this wouldn't happen with a man. I have not seen, of course, you know, you don't often see nude pictures of men. But the idea that you would take a public figure, a woman who's in a professional situation, and paint a nude picture and hang it in a public place is absolutely appalling. Regarding the campaign bringing self-inflicted wounds, you know, I personally think it's a little sexist to think just because John McCain sat beside Sarah Palin that that's looks like a father protecting a daughter or something like that. We think nothing of the picture of Obama and Biden standing next to each other, even facing each other in a sort of sexy kind of way. You know, nobody comments on that, and
well,
they shouldn't comment on
overall,
that.
Overall, though, overall, what is your thought about the way she has been treated? I mean, you pointed out this bar, and I'm not sure, as a member of the media, I want to be accountable for everything that happens in a bar.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, it's been interesting to see the reactions go through kind of a series. It started out with very vicious anger, you know, against her hairstyle was out of style, her kids, Bristol's pregnancy, the hockey mom remarks and so forth. Then it went from there to what I consider kind of hypocritical remarks about, you know, she can't do it all. You know, what is she going to do about this special needs kid and so forth? Then it has moved, interestingly, to pity because none of that worked. It seemed to kind of backfire on those who were promoting those kinds of arguments. Now it's that the poor woman, bless her heart. You know, I come from the South where you can say anything if you say bless your heart.
Well, hold on a second.
You know, she's in over her head.
Let's go to Ta-Nehisi because he wrote in The Atlantic, one of the columns he wrote is that he does feel sorry for Sarah Palin. Talk to me about that.
I have to refute that. I specifically said that I did not feel sorry for her, nor did I pity her. What
well,
I
agree
was
with you.
Piece.
Pity is a specific term, which we consider first. But tell me what you said. Tell me your take
yes,
on this.
What I was basically trying to do was trying to understand where she was coming from, which I think is sort of the basic task of any writer, whether you're with somebody or whether you're against them. It's a good idea to try to figure out where they're coming from. And in doing that, I tried to relate some of her experiences and some of her, I guess, her life experiences with some of my own. The response to that has been quite interesting because somehow that sort of equates with pitying her or feeling sorry for her. And in some of the worst cases, equates with actually thinking that maybe some of the criticism isn't valid. I think the criticism is completely valid that she's gotten.
But tell me, what are some of the life experiences of hers that you relate to?
There was a moment. Well, first of all, the five kids. I mean, five kids. I've got, you know, six brothers and sisters by four women that my father had. So I thought that, you know, the big family. There was a point in which Katie Kirk asked her about having not had a passport. And as I said in the piece, I had to think, wow, I don't have a passport now. I mean, she just got hers last year. I don't have one now. And there was a moment where she said specifically, look, you know, I've been working during this time. I've been raising all my kids. She immediately departed from that point and went and made some sort of partisan comment about elites or whatever. But I wanted to hear more about that. I was very interested in her as
you know,
a person, just
you,
as
Tom.
A writer.
You know,
I'm
I was
sorry.
Really interested in that remark because I agree with you. This is Janice talking. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in that. I think she would be wise to stick with that argument, don't you? Relating to the everyday person who doesn't have a passport, who has a big family and faces the kind of challenges that she does.
That speaks to this whole question we want to talk about later, whether is it her or is she being ill-advised. But let's bring Rebecca into this conversation. Rebecca, you wrote very pointedly in Salon.com. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you were not the protagonist behind the pick the dominatrix picture.
Yes, I wanted to make that clear.
That did not have anything to do with you or your piece. But you wrote very pointedly in Salon.com that you do not feel sorry for Palin.
I do not feel sorry for Palin. And I do believe that there's been sexist language deployed against her. Certainly what Janice is talking about and what Maria is talking about, questions about her ability to raise her children and run for vice president at the same time, the over-sexualization of her, that's sexist stuff. The level of dismay at her performance with Katie Couric in interviews with Charlie Gibson off the teleprompter, I don't believe that that's sexist. This is dismay with a candidate who's ill-prepared to answer questions, sometimes about her own running mate, for example, and his record on regulation. This is dismay with a candidate who is demonstrating through her own words that she is ill-equipped for the job. And I don't think that's sexist. And I don't. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about Tina Fey lampooning her. This is the way that this is what Saturday Night Live does. Tina Fey is a woman because Sarah Palin is a woman. But in some cases, including the clip that you played, what Tina Fey is doing is actually practically verbatim quoting Sarah Palin. And that's bad, regardless of whether she's a woman or a man.
Okay, hold on. Let's talk about some of Sarah Palin's own words. Here's a clip from her interview with Katie Couric on CBS News. Here it is.
You've cited Alaska's proximity to Russia mm-hmm. as part of your foreign policy experience. What did you mean by that?
That Alaska has a very narrow maritime border between a foreign country, Russia, and on our other side, the land boundary that we have with Canada. It's funny that a comment like that was kind of made to, reporters.
Mocked.
Yeah, mocked, I guess that's the word, yeah.
Janice, a number of conservative writers, we only have a minute in this segment, we're going to come back, we're going to take a short break and come back, so please forgive me if I have to interrupt, but there are a number of conservative writers now, including Kathleen Parker most recently, said, look, you know, it's hypocritical not to highlight her unreadiness, that it would be hypocritical, it would be sexist not to hold her to the same standard that one would hold a male candidate to who is, as we say, a heartbeat away from the White House.
Well, that would be right if it were fair and applied to everybody. But, you know, Senator Obama is abysmal outside of the teleprompter. He's even had a portable teleprompter to take with him to his rallies to give his stump speech. You know, this is kind of amazing to me that nobody's commented on that. That does not excuse her dismal performance, of course. But, you know, I would challenge anybody to say, you know, within a month of being chosen from being a governor to come into the arena of these kinds of piercing interviews, all of us ramble at times. All of us, don't give completely coherent responses and sometimes disjointed. So some of it, I think, is unfair. But, you know, given the fact she has rambled, she has not presented a coherent message. Part of that, I think, is the advisors she's had. They put Bush 41 and 43 advisors around her, and she has been somewhat tied up.
We need to take a short break, but we're going to pause just briefly and come back. We're speaking with Rebecca Traister, Janice Krauss, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and Marie Coco about the cultural phenomenon of Sarah Palin. Please stay with us. We're going to continue the conversation after a short break on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, my visit with Chris Gardner. He was the inspiration for the hit film The Pursuit of Happiness. We get his take on the Wall Street meltdown and how to survive through hard times. But first, we're going to continue our conversation about Sarah Palin and the Palin effect and Palin mania and all the questions that her candidacy has raised about the way we treat women in public life. We're asking, is it sexism or is it her? I'm joined by a roundtable of columnists who've been writing about this issue. Salon writer Rebecca Traister, Marie Coco, a columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group, Janice Krauss, she's an analyst with Concerned Women for America and a weekly contributor to townhall.com, and columnist Ta-Nehisi Coates, he's with The Atlantic. Ta-Nehisi, I wanted to talk to you about this whole question. This is a question which we talked about during the primary, which is the whole sexism versus racism issue. Now, Janice says that she thinks that Obama hasn't been held to a standard that perhaps another candidate might have been. She feels that there's a double standard at work here, that Sarah Palin's being held to a higher standard. What's your take on this?
I don't think Barack Obama could have won an Illinois Senate race giving an answer like that. Having said that, I think trying to weigh racism versus sexism is kind of a dead exercise. I mean, I could, you know, fill my blog for probably about 3 weeks if I just went on the internet and looked for racist things that happened to Barack Obama. I think at the end of the day, people have to ask themselves, look, who do you want in the White House? You know, you have to look at all the interviews, all the answers, all the debates and say, who do you want in the White House? I think this sort of, I mean, not to, you know, this entire discussion, but I think questions about what is or is not sexist, kind of a distraction at the end of the day.
So how do you think we should, for example, the next sort of big test for Sarah Palin, as for Joe Biden, is the debate Thursday night. So Ta-Nehisi, I'll start with you and then I'll go around the group. What do you think, in the ideal world, what should we be looking for? What is a fair way to evaluate both of these candidates?
I think you just have to look and see, does she have intelligent, informed answers? This whole sort of lowering the expectation game, I think, is sort of beside the point. I think she needs to appear intelligent and informed. The same standard that I would apply to Joe Biden should be applied to her.
Marie?
I agree completely. You know, I think that in a presidential campaign, we've had a lot of governors run for president. I don't remember any governor, including George Bush or Bill Clinton. The last two presidents obviously were governors before they were president. I don't think either one of those would have given the kind of answers that we've heard from Sarah Palin. They both knew that they had to be quite well informed on the issue. There was something of a small deal, not a big deal, but a small deal made back in 2000 about George Bush's lack of travel abroad. But people
those
did
were
not,
different times.
People
we were
did
not at war.
And people did not look at him and wonder, what is he thinking? You know, when you answer a question about foreign policy by saying when Putin rears his ugly head, he flies over Alaskan airspace. Well, when Putin rears his ugly head, he invades Georgia. So I think that generally speaking, what I have seen in covering politics is that governors are not expected to know as much as, for example, an incumbent president about foreign policy. And she is not going to be expected to know as much about foreign policy as Joe Biden does. But there is a minimum requirement. It's sort of like the minimum daily vitamin requirement that you just can't exist without. One thing I do want to say is that the judgment of Sarah Palin's performance in the debate, she's not qualified to be vice president if she merely survives the debate. What is dismaying me about this entire candidacy is that it's become, as I said, this novelty act. I think people are going to be drawn to watch the debate, not out of a sense that they want to hear what her views are, but they just want to see her. They want to see what she's going to do. I think some liberals are going to be looking for, you know, what's the next Tina Fey bit that's going to come out of it. I think it's very dismaying.
Just to clarify, I don't think she said when Putin rears his ugly head. I think she just said when he rears his head, although I think that is a phrase that people kind of heard, but I don't think that's what she said. Janice, what do you think people in the ideal world, what should they be looking for when they evaluate her performance and that of Joe Biden?
Well, what they really look for is trust. Whether this person is honest and authentic. And I think she needs to focus on that. One of the major shocks to me coming to Washington, D.C. about 15 years ago was all these people who are walking encyclopedias. And I've discovered, working closely with them, there are a lot of people who can spew out facts who have no wisdom and judgment. And I think the American public is looking for somebody that is honest and trustworthy. You know, all the research shows that when you go into that booth, you vote for the person that you trust. So I think she should be herself. She should recognize that she has the life experiences, the intuition, the intelligence to do the job. We were on a trip recently and listened to a tape of Thomas Paine, and he talked about all you need for governance is the intelligence to equip you to do the job.
But is it sexist to say I don't agree with that? Perhaps I think other credentials should apply. I mean, you, for example, have a PhD,
right,
which nobody gave you. You earn.
Exactly.
So why isn't that something that I could fairly evaluate in deciding whether I wanted you to participate in a conversation about politics?
Well, she's been a mayor. She's been a governor. This is a woman who has a public record of executive decision making. There are people who argue that her decision making is far more extensive than any of the other three candidates. So, you know, you can make an argument there. She certainly has a public record that can be evaluated. The people in Alaska, for instance, even now they're complaining that her approval rating is down to 63%. It was up to 80-something. So, you know, she is liked there. She's respected there. So I think
that
is
something. But again, Janice, I'm sorry. I don't mean to beat up on you, but this is exactly the kind of thing that people say, well, gee, if Obama is popular, that's evidence that he's a lightweight. If she's popular, that's evidence of a credential. I mean, this is the kind of thing, when you talk about double standards, people say
right.
They seem to be applied equally.
Well, I think during the break, she ought to focus on some facts. You know, the elitism, for instance, she ought to talk about the extremist research, the extremist record of voting. She ought to talk about his radical friends. She ought to talk about the earmarks record. There's plenty of facts that she can bring up, and I hope she will.
All right. Let's get Rebecca back in the conversation. Rebecca, in the ideal world, how do you think people should – how would you want people to evaluate the respective candidates during the debate?
I think I would want them to and would expect them to evaluate them on a combination of perhaps how they express their judgment and their wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of how the government works, how foreign policy might work, even if they don't have a lot of experience with it. I think that actually a certain amount of knowledge, wisdom, and education about this nation is a requirement. And something that people will be looking for in the debate. I would also like to say something about expectations for how Biden and Palin are going to react to each other. From day one, from the day that she was picked by McCain, pundits were talking about the idea that she was selected in part to declaw big bad Joe Biden for very sexist reasons, that she was a woman and he wouldn't be able to beat up on her. Now, she came out of the gate with that remarkable political speech at the convention and, you know, sort of became the pit bull for a while. And I think people got less nervous, you know, felt that maybe he wasn't going to be able to beat up on her because she was so tough. Well, now that we are back in a position where there are people who are feeling sympathy or empathy for her, I think that we're right back in a sense where the Republicans hoped we would be at this juncture going into a debate with Joe Biden, which is that she seems a little vulnerable. This is why we're having this conversation today. She seems vulnerable, and that may or may not limit the way that Joe Biden is able to address her in the debate. And I think we have to look for that.
No, we're not having this debate because she seems vulnerable. We're having this debate because she has evoked such strong reactions from Janice's the pinup in the bar, which did you see this with your own eyes, or you just heard about it?
No, I'm just reading about it.
You're just reading about this. This pinup in the bar, and in fact, we have seen, as Marie wrote about, these kinds of over-the-top metaphors. And it seems remarkable that a person who was just the governor of, you know, a state a few short weeks ago has now become a person that so many people feel moved to talk about and write about.
I'm very interested in your choice of the word strong reaction, because of all the politicians I've ever covered in my career, the person who evoked the strongest reactions was Hillary Clinton. And I think it's no accident that we're now seeing that kind of typhoon reaction to Sarah Palin, where her supporters are absolutely diehard. She can do no wrong. She can make no errors. No lack of knowledge is too little knowledge. And her detractors feel comfortable putting her in a black corset. There's something about a female candidate that is bringing part of this out. And I think the fact that we've seen it with both Sarah Palin, a clear conservative, and Hillary Clinton, a clear liberal, should really be telling us there's something about their femaleness that's at play here.
Ta-Nehisi wants to get into Ta-Nehisi Coates.
I just want to quickly disagree with that. I mean, I can make the same case for Obama. I mean, one could say that his detractors are putting him on a T-shirt looking like Curious George, and his supporters think he's God. I mean, I just think that's highly subjective. It's not, you know, clear whether it's female or you know, race or what have you.
I also, if I can interject, this is Rebecca, I think that we can't separate the strength of the reaction to Hillary Clinton from what we're seeing with Palin, because Palin was sold to the voters, and specifically to women voters, as a sort of, as a completion of Hillary's feminist project, which was to break that glass ceiling. Now, of course, from the beginning, it was clear that her politics were in direct opposition to everything Hillary Clinton had ever worked for. But in part, when we now see her fumbling and sometimes looking incompetent, you know, as one of the very few women who's ever made it to this close to executive office, I think that that's amplifying the reaction of some of those Hillary supporters who'd invested so much in the project of female presidential leadership to then have this woman to be looking at and listening to. I think it's certainly amplifying their level of dismay.
Well, in fact, Sarah Palin made that point. Let's play a short clip from her acceptance speech in St. Paul. Here it is.
It was rightly noted in Denver this week that Hillary left 18 million cracks in the highest, hardest glass ceiling in America. But it turns out the women of America aren't finished yet, and we can shatter that glass ceiling once and for all.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Janice Krauss, Marie Coco, Rebecca Traister, and Ta-Nehisi Coates about the candidacy of Sarah Palin and all it seems to evoke. Janice?
Oh, Rebecca's comments reminded me of a perception that I have had, that I think one of the reasons conservative women have responded so positively to Sarah Palin is that they could not respond to the feminist agenda and the women like Hillary who represented that agenda. But they can respond to a woman like Sarah Palin because she's one of our own. You know, she's made it to the highest ranks. And most mainstream women are glad that it wasn't a radical feminist who is right there at the threshold of the highest position in the country. Because in general, we perceive women who are the radical feminist as sacrificing everything for their career. And here's a woman who has balanced family, husband, career in a way that is very admirable to mainstream women. And the emphasis on opportunities for women, not quotas, and all the other things that have made mainstream women very uncomfortable, they are comfortable with seeing Sarah Palin in that position. They're comfortable with her steely determination in that mm-hmm. acceptance speech at the Republican convention saying, "How dare you mm-hmm. attack me with these kinds of attacks?" Mm-hmm. And coming back and proving her metal, as you would say.
Yeah, I just have to say something about the feminist agenda and Sarah Palin. There is no woman who has any number of children, let alone five children, who would be able to run for public office without having benefited from the contemporary feminist agenda. So to discredit that agenda and to say she's better than that agenda, I think really ignores history.
Speaking of ignoring history, can any of us really ignore who we are in this conversation? Is there any way really to evaluate these candidates without thinking about your own story?
And this is Janice again.
Janice? Very quickly.
You definitely cannot. And I would be the last one to denigrate the feminist movement as it was when it worked for equality. I don't think there's any question that in the last 20 years or so, the feminist movement got off track and focused on a specific agenda that was not shared by the majority of the American public.
Okay. Rebecca Ta-Nehisi, we want to hear from you. What do you think?
I'm going to go back to your question, which takes me back to where I started and why I wrote what I wrote. I think it's faulty to try to divorce yourself from any sort of judgments that you make about Sarah Palin. And so the first question I asked when watching that interview was, who am I and what do I see? And I think that the one, you know, good point that's been made, I think women do see somebody with five kids running for executive office and say, wow, and sort of admire that. So I can relate to that without necessarily supporting her.
Rebecca?
And as for me, yeah, I mean, it certainly, I question all the time where I'm coming from in my reaction to Sarah Palin as a feminist and somebody who devotes her career to writing about gender and politics. And I think that one of the things that's been dismaying about her performance in the Katie Couric interviews and the Charlie Gibson interviews of the past few weeks is seeing somebody who is has been given the job of being a history maker, no matter how you feel about her, and somehow representing women in leadership positions give a dismal performance. And I think that that's very hard for anybody who has any kind of investment, no matter what your politics, in feminism and in women's advancement in the political process.
Marie, what about you?
I agree with that comment completely. You know, with respect to the five children, I personally never have heard any man who's run for public office be asked, how can you run for public office and still be a father?
I know John McCain has seven. Nobody's asked him, how are you going to manage all your
precisely,
family responsibilities?
You know, so, but again, you know, I agree with Rebecca. You can't separate the fact that here is Sarah Palin stepping on the shoulders of so many women who were not on the right. Frankly, they were liberals, they were on the left, they've been vilified. Let me just go back to 1992, when Hillary Clinton was not a candidate, but the candidate's wife. And there were questions raised about her law firm work. And she made the comment, you know, I suppose I could have stayed home and baked cookies and had tea, but I decided to fulfill my profession. She was vilified for that comment. She was not the candidate. She was the candidate's spouse. And now there's a glorification of Sarah Palin because she is out there with five children fulfilling her own profession and her own ambition. And I say more power to her. But let's not forget the double standards and the contradictions that are being applied here.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Can I just quickly ascertain whether everybody's going to watch the debate Thursday night?
Yes.
You're going to watch the debate?
Wouldn't miss it.
You know? Wouldn't miss it? Okay, well, then we'll have to sort of reconvene and find out what your reactions are after that. Marie Coco writes for the Washington Post Writers Group. Janice Krause is a political commentator for Concerned Women for America. Rather, she's an analyst, and she also writes a column for townhall.com. She's both. They were kind enough to join me here in our Washington studios. Ta-Nehisi Coates of The Atlantic joined us from New York, and Rebecca Traister of the online magazine Salon.com joined us from our New York bureau. I thank you all so much for speaking
with
us.
Thanks, Michelle.
Our pleasure.
Thanks so much, Michelle.